This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Joe Ramsey. The Taliban on Sunday blamed the United States for the chaotic evacuation of tens of thousands of Afghans and foreigners from Kabul 1 week after the hardline Islamist group returned to power in a rapid victory that stunned the world. Terrified Afghans continue to try to flee, deepening a tragedy at Kabul airport where the United States and its allies have been unable to cope with the huge numbers of people trying to get on evacuation flights. Britain's defense ministry said Sunday 7 people had died in the crowds without giving further details. Journalists at the scene have reported people being crushed while others were dehydrated and terrified. The U.S. military says during the distress of evacuation, an Afghan woman went into labor on a U.S. Air Force flight and gave birth to a baby girl in the plane's cargo bay moments after landing at a base in Germany. The crisis has led to mounting criticism of the U.S. and its Western allies, which this year pressed on with the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan as the government and security forces struggled to contain rising Taliban violence. Leaders will discuss the situation in a virtual summit on Tuesday. The U.S., which has thousands of troops trying to secure Kabul airport, has set a deadline to complete the evacuations by August 31st. The Defense Department on Sunday enlisted the help of several major airlines in transporting people who have been flown to U.S. bases in the Gulf and Europe back to America. There are up to 15,000 Americans and 50 to 60,000 Afghan allies who need to be evacuated, according to U.S. Joe Biden's administration. Find more on these stories and the rest of the day's news at voanews.com or on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. The death toll in the major earthquake that struck Haiti on August 14th has risen to 2,207, authorities said Sunday, as attacks on aid convoys have complicated efforts to bring relief to survivors. New bodies have been found in the south, according to the country's Civil Protection Office, adding that 344 people remain missing and more than 12,000 have been listed as injured. Search and rescue workers are continuing to pick through the jumbled mounds of debris left by the powerful 7.2 magnitude quake, but hopes of finding survivors are fading by the hour. Haitian authorities claim nearly 600,000 people were directly affected by the disaster and are in need of urgent humanitarian assistance, but efforts to deliver food, water, and medical supplies to quake victims have been complicated not just by road and bridge damage, but by attacks on aid convoys by so far unidentified gangs. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi on Sunday met with Japan's foreign minister and called on Tokyo to release the Islamic Republic's funds that have been frozen in Japan because of U.S. sanctions over its nuclear program. Japan and, to a larger extent, South Korea are both major exporters of technology and hold billions of dollars in Iranian assets. These funds have been frozen since former U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew Washington from a landmark nuclear deal and reimposed sanctions on Tehran in 2018. Washington said in mid-July it was allowing Iran to use the frozen funds to settle debts in South Korea and Japan, but insisted it did not allow any to be transferred to Tehran itself. Talks between Iran and world powers aimed at reviving the 2015 accord have stalled since late June. The United States has been involved indirectly in the talks. Qatar's first legislative polls for two-thirds of an advisory council will be held on October 2nd, according to a decree issued by the ruling emir on Sunday and published by his office. Qataris will elect 30 members of the 45-seat body, while its emir will continue to appoint the remaining 15 members. The council will have legislative authority and approve general state policies and the budget. It will also exercise control over the executive, except for bodies setting defense, security, economic, and investment policy. The October polls have sparked some debate, though, on electoral inclusion, after some members of a tribe found themselves ineligible to vote under a law restricting vote to those whose family were present in Qatar before 1930. Find more at voanews.com. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga.
One of the elements is to ensure, because for even development to happen, we need a state. We now need a state which is fully functional. We need a state we can provide justice, we can provide security, we can provide health, education, food to its people.
The Mali foreign minister pledges to strengthen the relationship between his country and the U.S. and explains how the current government is handling its promised transition to democracy.
Nous sommes en train de préparer notre armée.
Asomo says Cameroon will be sending 800 troops to the CAR in September because Cameroon faces insecurity when attacks occur in CAR.
The command of UN peacekeeping forces in the Central African Republic says rebels there continue to challenge authorities and threaten neighboring countries like Cameroon.
Governments need to be doing more to ensure that that legislation is properly implemented, that, you know, people like law enforcement, the judicial system, and communities are aware of sex trafficking and are able to then respond accordingly.
And COVID-19-driven economic and social difficulties in Malawi caused a dramatic increase of sex trafficking. Those are more coming up on Nightline Africa. Mali has gone through two military coups in the past year. Recently, Mali Foreign Minister Abdoulaye Diop was in Washington to meet with U.S. officials. The United States has been a key partner in the group of five Sahel nations, Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger, that are battling insurgent groups and intercommunal violence. Diop says his mission was to strengthen the relationship with the U.S. and explain how the current government, led by coup leader Assimi Goïta, is handling its promised transition to democracy. VOA's Bambara service Modibo Dembele sat down with Foreign Minister Diop a few days ago to talk about the country's challenges. In this excerpt of their conversation, they start by discussing how the Taliban takeover and how it might affect the G5 Sahel effort.
Well, what we are confronted with in the G5 is definitely our problem. We know terrorism, for instance, is a global threat that in which we are just playing our part. Our countries today, like Mali and many G5 Sahel countries, are investing more than 20-25% of the national budget for the defense and military expenditure. It's a lot, because this is coming at the expense of what we could have invested in education, in health, and in other sectors. But what we are trying also to achieve is to make sure that we get the international support, because where Mali collapsed, or Malian states, the problem that we had in the northern part of Mali in 2012 was contestative to the Western, maybe NATO intervention in Libya, which in our view were ill-prepared, ill-executed, and there was not, the aftermath was not handled properly, which has created this situation to us. Because of that, we think that Western countries and the international community have a particular responsibility to come in to help us. That's why the G5 Sahel countries have requested the UN Security Council to put the G5 Sahel joint force into a Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, but also beyond that to put in place a predictable and sustainable funding mechanism to come and in support of this region, which is subject to a situation that has been created outside of the region.
The situation on the ground shows us today that the military solution has shown its limits. Although we have many foreign troops stationed in Mali. So based on your own analysis, what should be the new strategies that should be put in place to prevent that desperate youth from joining those jihadist group?
We know that the military response is needed. It will probably continue to be the first response as we continue to remain under attack. But we know it's not enough. And in my view, the defense and the security matter are too serious to be left only to the military. And with that in mind, for lasting solution, we need to look at different issues. And for me today, we need to provide with the prevention, because what we are trying to do, if you are in the military, sometimes it's late or even too late. We need to prevent. Prevention means what? Development. Giving opportunity to our young people, giving them jobs, educating them, giving them reason to remain in their neighborhood, to practice agriculture, for instance, over development activities. For me, this is the future for us. We have to make sure that, because if you look at today in many areas of Mali, in the Delta, in Mopti, in the northern part of Mali, the economy is mainly the criminal economy. It means that those who are coming to give opportunity to our young people are either drug smugglers or terrorist organizations. Can we shift that to make sure that tomorrow we are bringing jobs, we are bringing company, we are bringing opportunity, we are bringing education, entrepreneurship, so that those people can create opportunity and wealth, and they have an option. If they have an offer from a terrorist organization, they can have a second thought to say, this is not the only option to me. So for me, development, fighting poverty, lack of education, fighting injustice, are the opportunities we need to look at to say, okay, this is the best way for us to prevent. And one of the elements is to ensure, because for even development to happen, we need a state. We now need a state which is fully functional. We need a state we can provide justice, we can provide security, we can provide health, education, food to its people. That's why having a state which is deployed on its entire territory and also capable to provide basic social services, including safety to its citizens.
That was Abdoulaye Diop, the foreign minister of Mali, speaking with VOA's Modibo Dembele from a Bambara service. Zimbabwe is listed among countries with the worst record of internet censorship in Southern Africa. That's the finding of a new report by the UK firm Comparitech, entitled Internet Censorship 2021, a global map of internet restrictions. Ande Gondo has the story.
The study identifies the degree to which countries enjoy internet freedom, including those that allow torrenting or downloading of copyrighted materials and the use of virtual private networks, which help people get around internet blocks but keep their identities secret. The report assigns points indicating the amount of internet restrictions in a given country. Those that score up to 11 points are the most repressive. Countries with no points have the fewest number of restrictions and the most online freedom. According to the new report, Zimbabwe notched 4 out of 11 points, making it the most repressive in Southern Africa. Joining it was Zambia, which recently banned social media during its most recent elections. Two neighboring democracies, Botswana and Malawi, only scored 2 and 1 points respectively, indicating greater internet freedom. The study follows an earlier report by VOA citing the World Press Freedom Index produced by Reporters Without Borders. In that report, Zimbabwe tumbled by 4 notches to 130 from 2020's ratings. The study cites the incarceration of journalist Hope Chingono and other citizens for posting messages deemed to be false or undermining to the presidency on social media. New media entrepreneur Nigel Mganu, who is also the founder of an online media outfit called 263 Chat, says the Comparitech report's findings are not far-fetched.
So it's of paramount importance that the internet is always on. We've also witnessed over the last couple of years the issue around throttling, especially when there are demonstrations or elections or any sort of national event like that. Like for us as an organization, we've had to work around that. So what we realized was to many, many people, WhatsApp is the actual internet. So that tells you the different levels of internet access. It's a shame that, you know, our next door neighbor Zambia, that they, you know, around the recent election, that WhatsApp was actually down.
But other online entrepreneurs think that censorship is not limited to only developing or autocratic countries. Edwin Chabuka of TechZim, A new media technology company says whatever is happening in Zimbabwe reflects a growing global picture.
Twitter is the one most famously known for limiting or restricting tweets that have elements of hate speech, as well as temporarily or permanently suspending accounts that post unfriendly content which violates their terms of service. YouTube also does its part by demonetizing content that violates their terms of service and also suspending those same accounts if need be. It's a form of censorship at a global scale. And so censorship done right can mean safeguarding the cultures and values of a particular society. Like a lot of aspects of life, it's a balancing act.
Nompilo Hove with Media Institute of Southern Africa, Zimbabwe's ICT department, says there's been a marked increase in internet censorship and clampdowns as Zimbabweans migrate to digital workspaces due to COVID-19 lockdown restrictions on movement.
But I think we have seen quite a rise, particularly between 2020 and 2021, and more fully because now people are relying on the internet even for social movements. I'm sure you note that in Zimbabwe we've had several social movements, hashtag this flag, hashtag Tajamuka, and more recently during COVID-19, hashtag Zimbabwean Lives Matter. All of these online social movements have also triggered the increase in internet censorship in Zimbabwe. And this internet censorship has been seen in different forms, but I think one of the key forms has also been social media monitoring or surveillance on social media, and which surveillance has also escalated to arrests. So many people have been arrested based on their online communication. And I think the more prevalent cases that you note are the arrests of prominent journalist Hopo Chingono, but also even political opposition leaders or activists, the likes of Adam Haere, the likes of Job Sikala.
Meanwhile, Zimbabwe is bracing for the passing of the Cybersecurity and Data Protection Bill. The Media Institute of Southern Africa in Zimbabwe is among those that believe the mooted law is a harbinger of dark days to come for freedom of expression. MISA Zimbabwe and other observers say that with the upcoming 2023 general elections, the clampdown on internet freedom is bound to worsen as social media platforms give citizens the chance to vent their unhappiness with issues touching their lives. But the government says the law aims to provide for the investigation and collection of evidence of cybercrimes and unauthorized data collection and breaches, and to allow for the admissibility of electronic evidence for such offenses. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
The commander of the UN peacekeeping forces in the Central African Republic says rebels there continue to challenge authorities and threaten neighboring countries like Cameroon. General Daniel Sidiki Traore made the comments during a weekend visit to Cameroon for talks with defense officials. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaounde.
The UN Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission, MINUSCA, says the situation in the Central African Republic remains fragile. General Daniel Sidiki Traore is the Burkina Faso-born force commander of MINUSCA. He says rebel attacks and human rights violations on CAR civilians and institutions are frequent.
Nous sommes dans le cadre de la mission des Nations Unies en République Centrafricaine à une période.
He says the fundamental objective of the UN peacekeeping mission is to protect civilians, UN mission staff and offices, the country's state institutions, and restore definitive peace is facing lots of challenges. He says he is visiting Cameroon because more cooperation is needed between UN troops and Cameroon's military to stop rebel advances and bring back order to the CAR. Traore spoke in Cameroon, where he was visiting as the head of a MINUSCA delegation. MINUSCA reports that since August 1, it documented 18 incidents of abuse and cases of human rights violations perpetrated by rebels. 30 victims of the abuses are receiving psychosocial care in Bangui. In July, another 20 people reported abuses in the CAR capital Bangui. More than 25 CAR communities suffered bloody attacks from rebels. MINUSCA reports that in July, 5,500 wounded civilians received health assistance in its hospitals. Traore said CAR rebels facing reprisals from UN peacekeepers hide on both sides of the Cameroon border. Joseph Beti Asomo is Cameroon's defense minister.
Nous sommes en train de préparer notre armée. Ils vont monter en septembre pour la 8e année.
Asomo says Cameroon will be sending 800 troops to the CAR in September because Cameroon faces insecurity when attacks occur in CAR. He says when rebels block the road linking Cameroon's coastal commercial city Douala and Bangui, economic activity declines and thousands of transporters are deprived of their source of livelihood. Asomo said since December, when post-election violence erupted in the Central African Republic, rebels have blocked the road linking Douala to Bangui at least 6 times. He said the number of people displaced within the CAR rose from 300,000 in December to 500,000 in July. Asomo, however, said that many of the displaced have returned to safe localities. Asomo and Traore did not say where in the CAR that Cameroon's troops will be deployed, but Asomo said they will be expected to secure the border. He said Cameroon has deployed several hundred additional troops to its eastern border to stop rebels from entering Cameroon. Violence in the CAR degenerated into an armed conflict in 2014 when a coalition of armed groups known as the Seleka overthrew then-President François Bozizé. Cameroon shares a 900-kilometer boundary with the Central African Republic and hosts 300,000 refugees from the neighboring country. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Uganda human rights activists have welcomed President Yoweri Museveni's condemnation of torture allegedly committed by police and the armed forces. But rights activists say they are skeptical whether Mr. Museveni will back up his words by prosecuting security forces accused of abuse. Halima Athman reports from Kampala.
Describing his security officers as lazy, President Yoweri Museveni said in a televised address Saturday night that he wanted to discuss human rights concerns. Museveni warned security forces against barking at or beating suspects, detaining suspects for long periods in jail, and deporting foreigners without trial, saying it disadvantages the country. He asked for videos to be played of suspects arrested in the trial of the attempted assassination of former Chief of Defense Forces General Edward Katumba Wamala. One video showed a suspect sobbing in court, talking about his alleged torture. He says, they beat me with all kinds of canes. I wouldn't know what they used to beat me with. He says, the situation makes you say things you shouldn't be saying because it is so hard. Other videos showed graphic images of people allegedly tortured by security forces, including a man with raw wounds on his back, another one limping out of court, and another of a police officer running after a woman and beating her repeatedly. Museveni blamed the torture on acts of indiscipline by individual officers and the failure of senior commanders to instruct junior officers on what shouldn't and should be done. According to Museveni, these abominable acts damage the legitimacy, history, and achievements of the National Resistance Army that brought him to power and the ruling National Resistance Movement Party.
Beating captives is wrong. Why? You undermine your case in court when the court discovers that you got information through torture. Secondly, on account of beating, somebody may admit what is not true. Torture, assassination, etc., are used by lazy people that are not ready to do more work using the gaps in the stories of the criminals if they are telling lies.
Museveni promised to eliminate such torture and beatings and use the law to uproot the culture of reactionary behavior in the armed forces. However, Livingstone Sewanyana, executive director of the Foundation for Human Rights Initiative, expressed doubt that Museveni's words will be followed up with real change. He says Museveni often changes the rules to suit his goals, leaving questions as to his sincerity and commitment to what he says.
There seems to be a class of people who are increasingly being untouchable, and the president needs them for his political survival. So much as he comes out strong with warnings, he definitely does not live to his words. And the way politics is played here. It is all about who are the presidents here.
Samuel Herbert Nsubuga is CEO of a non-government organization, the African Center for the Treatment and Rehabilitation of Torture Victims. He tells VOA that due to the COVID-19 pandemic, they have not had access to any prison facilities. But he says the situation of torture in the country is prevalent and the president needs to act.
But the issue is those images he showed. I would like those people who did that to the suspects be prosecuted in the courts of law. There is that gap which we really want the justice institutions to fill.
So Anyana insists Museveni's pronouncement was triggered by the need to restore the country's image and the realization that torture has a negative impact on the economy. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
COVID-19-driven economic and social difficulties in Malawi has caused a dramatic increase of sex trafficking in the southern African country. A local organization in Malawi says prior to the pandemic, it was receiving about 2 to 3 sex trafficking case referrals every week, but that has spiraled 7 or more weekly. As Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre, the spike is largely blamed on poor enforcement of anti-trafficking laws.
Records from the non-governmental People Saving Girls at Risk, or PSGR, show that in 2020 alone, the organization handled more than 600 cases of sex trafficking. It is 3 times more than what has been reported in the past over a similar period. Caleb Ngombo is the director of the organization.
And in one of the worst case scenarios, we rescued about 43 girls just in a row. And these were being trafficked by somebody from a particular community, taking them to Lilongwe.
Ngombo says most of the victims are from poor families where a perpetrator promises to provide education and employment. Among victims is a survivor whose identity is concealed, but we will call her Hilda. Hilda, aged 17, told VOA through a messaging app that she was trafficked last year in an attempt to escape poverty at home soon after the death of her parents. She says, after feeling pity with my situation, my friend asked to go where she works. Upon reaching there, I was disturbed to see that it was a sex work. I could not object because I needed money. Hilda says she left the place because of an abusive environment. She describes an incident where another sex worker hit her in the head with a bottle of beer for allegedly spoiling her market because she thought Hilda was more than attractive than she was. Hilda also says her employer was abusing her by not providing food to her as had been agreed upon prior. Malawi is a source, destination and transit country for human trafficking. Malawi has stringent laws against trafficking and exploitation, however, including the 2015 Trafficking in Persons Act, which criminalized sex and labor trafficking. The legislation also prescribes punishment of up to 14 years imprisonment for offenses involving an adult victim and up to 21 years imprisonment for those involving a child victim. The country has also endorsed several international human rights treaties, including the Maputo Protocol, which mandates that governments protect women and girls from sexual exploitation and trafficking. Tsitsi Matekaire is the leader of End Sex Trafficking at Equality Now, an international NGO that focuses on using the law to protect women's and girls' rights. She told VOA via a messaging app from Britain that human trafficking has long remained a global problem.
Over the past 2 or so decades, what we see from the international statistics from the United Nations, the Organ for Drugs and Crime, is that trafficking for sexual exploitation is the most common, and women and girls are the majority of victims. So about 72% of all trafficking victims are women and girls, and 94% of women and girls are trafficked for sexual exploitation.
She said, however, that many countries are failing to end the practice largely because of a failure to enforce anti-human trafficking legislation.
As we've seen in Malawi with the Trafficking in Persons Act, but legislation alone is insufficient. Governments need to be doing more to ensure that that legislation is properly implemented, that, you know, people like law enforcement, the judicial system, and communities are aware of sex trafficking and are able to then respond accordingly.
Also, a 2020 U.S. Trafficking in Persons report shows Malawi's general failure to effectively implement its human trafficking laws. Trevor Hamela is Malawi's Deputy Director for Child Affairs in the Ministry of Gender. He says the Malawi government is failing to enforce its law on human trafficking for a number of reasons.
One of the reasons is the fact that even the law itself is not well understood and interpreted the way it's supposed to be, because not all the enforcement officers were properly trained. Of course, they could have been trained. Maybe they don't understand the law. The other aspect is that even our prosecutors, they also needed to know the law so that whenever they're making charges, the charges are according to the provision of the current Trafficking in Persons Act.
Hamela says in the meantime, to reduce the sex trafficking in Malawi, the government's law enforcement agencies are mounting roadblocks in areas suspected to be routes for the traffickers. Lamik Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Netline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, sports, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. And now in Netline Africa Sports, Namibia's Beatrice Maslinga won silver in the women's 100 meters final at the World Athletics Under 20 Championships in Nairobi on Thursday. The 18-year-old, who was sixth in the Olympics 200 meters final, ran a time of 11.39 seconds to finish behind Jamaica's winner Tina Clayton, with Switzerland's Melissa Gershmich taking bronze. Also, Botswana's Leslie Tobogo secured the men's 100 meters gold medal, winning in a time of 10.19 seconds. There was double gold for the host nation, as Kenya's Benson Kiplangat won the men's 5,000 meters, with Teresia Muthoni Gateri taking the women's 3,000 meters title. Namibia's Maslinga is blocked from running distances between 400 meters and a mile under World Athletics rules because her testosterone levels are beyond the allowed limit for female athletes to compete over that distance unless she medically lowers her testosterone for a period of at least 6 months. It's the same case for her compatriot Kristen Mboma, who features in the women's 200 meters in Nairobi, having picked up an Olympic silver medal in Tokyo. In the men's 100 meters in Nairobi, Botswana's Tebogo finished ahead of South Africa's Benjamin Richardson to take gold. Cuba's Shena Rengife Moteya took bronze. In football, Nigeria will stage a Six Nation Women International Tournament next month in Lagos. Named after the country's first lady, Dr. Aisha Buhari, organizers said the invitational tournament would be an annual event in celebration of the evolution and development of women's football, as well as the celebration of the girl child. This year, the best women's teams on the continent, including South Africa, Mali, Ghana, Cameroon, and Morocco, will join hosts Nigeria in the Soccer Fiesta. The tournament runs from September 13th to 21st. And following the successful Africa Cup of Nations draw in Yaounde, Cameroon, CAF has released the official match schedule for the tournament. The first match will be played on Sunday, January 9th, 2022, between host Cameroon and Burkina Faso. Holders Algeria will face former winners Ivory Coast in the group stage. Meanwhile, Eritrea has progressed to the second round of the FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup qualifiers after ejecting Djibouti. Eritrea beat Djibouti 3-0 in the return leg played on Wednesday in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to qualify on a 6-1 goal aggregate.
And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict and in time of peace. Here is one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. In the midst of a dangerous security deterioration in Kabul and Afghanistan and the advance of the forces against the government from the south into Kabul and the refusal of President Biden to change the date of his withdrawal plans, the Security Council met in opening session last week. In the previous days, the Council has been discussing the situation in Afghanistan in closed session of the Council, and no action had been taken. Now, with the Taliban at the doors of Kabul and demands being made for the complete withdrawal of American and NATO forces along with those who assisted them throughout the 20 years of occupation, it was necessary for the Council to pronounce itself on the maintenance of international peace and security. In contrast to the media, both international and national concentration on assigning blame for the evolving situation and determining who will suffer politically from the situation, as well as offering proposals or solutions which in a statecraft and diplomatic situation might be difficult to implement. The Security Council met under the presidency of India for the month of August to tackle the situation. The Secretary General pronounced to the Council his deep concern at the deteriorating security situation, the dangers to Afghans in the country, and calling on the Security Council to take urgent measures. Even though the 15 members of the Security Council have differing views about the situation, they focused on the practical plan for stabilizing the situation and avoiding major escalation. They were all agreed that the Security Council and the international community should not accept the seizure of power by force in Afghanistan. They strongly urged the establishment of transitional arrangements involving all factions and groups in Afghanistan. And they echoed the views of the Secretary General and some other council members that women and girls should be protected and ensured the advancement they have made in the last 20 years. Regrettably, even though the Security Council was able promptly after the session of the Council to agree on a very firm statement recommending action, the media and the world press did not pay much attention to what they said. But this is very important because it is important to focus on a multilateral approach to tackling the evolving situation in Afghanistan. For example, the Security Council has many tools in its toolbox to cope with the situation. Number one, the Security Council can adopt a firm resolution under Chapter 8 and Chapter 7 of the Charter, which would order total ceasefire and cease movement by all hostile forces. The Council can call on the Secretary General to set up a security arrangement, either in the form of peacekeeping observers to supervise the ceasefire and to ensure that no one disrupts that ceasefire, with the full understanding that whoever does it will pay a heavy price available to the council. This is important for small states like those in Africa. There has been too much of a tendency for unilateral measures by major powers to pursue the goals. We have seen that this is a dangerous trend. But what we are hearing from the media is that one superpower has the power to do things now, and they must do it, disregarding the interest of other member states. Just take one example. There has been call for the removal of Afghans and those who assisted the NATO forces to be removed and taken somewhere else. We are now finding that it's easy to make such accommodation, but where do you put them? And we have learned in the last few days that only one state has announced publicly that it is ready to assist in receiving about 2,000 Afghans because they have been approached by the United States. That happens to be an African state, Uganda. So it is important, and the Africans in the council should insist that unilateral measures to be taken, and it is time for the security to act concretely. I thank you.
That was one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday here on Headline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect with music from the continent.
Déjà doté la petite lève, deux, trois commerces, deux, trois femmes et surtout Kinshasa. On me dit que me baille. On me dit que me baille. On te dit, il faut m'emballer que t'es jamais là. Que tu passes ta vie au calme et calé sur Insta. On me dit que me baille. Maman dit d'arrêter. Tu veux ton nom sur mon testament, c'est pas gagné. Le tapis rouge devant chez maman. T'es qui toco, ton corps est dangereux. Et ça nourrit pas. T'as comme un manche pour avoir le billet, comme un monégasque.
I'm gonna get this kind of feeling. I say that sweet good feeling.
shame you. After the party, say we don't go to my place.
I love you.
Lutalo.
John Black, African boy, Mr. Ayabas. Ayabas. Ichi vitu kutula.
Bako chokola. Nizo mutima kunwa.
Mkwana kutula.
Kisale olelo. Ndagala kukuwa samanya.
Ichi vitu kutula.
Bako chokamba. Nizo mutima kunwa.
Mkwana kutula.
Kisale olelo. Ndagala kukuwa samanya.
Kumande wanambi mbele yunga ninze. Ukulinze mboye kwetula bambunze. Nzunze chida piko mutima mpunde. Baby Olimbie, oh wow, ya gana pite mabiga wanju, kufulu kutukutu, nandi munda munju, selu wele fimi ya kebedi ugondu, but the fini wendu, baby mbakuwa wanju,
kila nini kikuona, ugweli minakona, siju nini loga, napenda situ kungendo, mapenzi ya wepo, unakata kukwona, mapenzi ya kwa ya menipa oma,
when in a beer, beer, beer.
Free, 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 I'm like, ayo, ayo.
Our Sunday music spot on Nightline Africa from the English service of the Voice of America. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Join us again on Saturday. Have a very good evening.